As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We have a very, very special guest. She is the host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, also one of the stars of NFL Live on ESPN, Mina Kimes. And Mina, I got to tell you, so your podcast co-hosted by a canine named Lenny. Mm-hmm. I misread our exchange about the timing of this show, and because I misread the time zone, and so I thought we were going to be doing this 3 hours earlier. So it was going to be before I picked up the kids from school. So this might have been the Andy Staples Show featuring Cookie.
Ah,
with Mina Kimes featuring Lenny. So
Lenny's one of a kind. I don't know if Cookie's got any, you know, on mic experience, but not every dog can just step up and co-host.
Cookie is 4 months old. She's a Bernie doodle. She has attempted to eat some mics, but she has not yet asked a question on mic. So I will be Lenny's agent, though. I got to tell you, your podcast, he gets to ask one question per show. I feel like it's time to expand his role. He needs to get like two or three questions.
Well, you know, listeners, longtime listeners remember when he used to ask it in his voice, which is a voice that I do in lieu of, anyone who has a dog knows that they do voices for their dogs. So I don't know why I sound shame. Anyways, I stopped doing the voice after I was just mortified when I had like Matt Hasselbeck as a guest. And I was like, I can't ask Matt Hasselbeck a question in my dog's voice. And since then, I've gotten many negative reviews saying he's been silenced, free Lenny. So you're not the only one lobbying on his behalf.
I'm in. And well, no, I just remember when I was doing SiriusXM shows, when I started with them in 2015, we had a Basset Hound. And Basset Hounds, very vocal creatures, very, you know, they're not shy about letting you know what's going on. And she's, and so something would happen and she would be on the show. So I just had to be prepared to have her on the show at all times. So I think I can find a way to work Cookie in once she gets to the point where she won't bite everything in sight.
Just ease it in, you know, maybe a couple yips, bark here and there.
Well, I was going to have her do a mock draft, but you know, I think she's a big Zach Wilson fan. She would prefer the Jaguars to take him over Trevor Lawrence. So I don't know. I mean, she's a Yikes. Puppy. What does she know?
So dogs usually want to take tailbacks early, which of course we nerd football do not agree with. So I don't let Lenny.
No. Well, we will get into drafting philosophy because this is, I wanted to have you on because you are great at explaining the why of football. And I try to tell people I would never use a first round pick on a running back unless that running back can catch 60 balls a year. And people are like, well, no, what? But I was thinking about this as you guys were talking, you were talking to Courtney Cronin today on your podcast about needs and you've been on NFL Live and you've almost gotten away from the word wide receiver. You're using pass catcher this year so you can include Kyle Pitts in this, in this bunch at the top. And I feel like the backs who catch a lot of passes need to be involved in this too, because I just, in the way the NFL has evolved, if you cannot contribute to the passing game on every down, I'm not sure how much value you have.
Yes. But I would say from a draft value perspective, while a back like, I don't know, Najee Harris is a great pass catcher, great route runner. He's my RB1. Well, you know, he's still probably going to average like 7 yards a reception. So again, on a relative value basis, when you're thinking about roster construction and where to allocate those resources, I would still lean towards not even that first top three of wide receivers, but the next tier as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, because Harris is very valuable. ETN, we saw, who can catch a lot of passes. Kenneth Gainwell from Memphis, the guy I think might wind up actually being the best out of this bunch. Those are all guys you get very low in the first, high in the second, you know, mid-second. So there's value there. But I was very interested in what you guys were talking about on NFL Live on Tuesday, where you did a mock draft, you and Dan Orlovsky, and you were the GM for the 49ers. So you went with Justin Fields. And then Dan proposed a trade where the Cardinals take Kyle Pitts. And I was like, that is nuts. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, that is genius.
I love it for Arizona. I don't think I can't remember exactly what Dan, I think Dan said a second next year, which I don't think is going to be enough to move from 16 to 4, generously, given the appetite for Kyle Pitts amongst the NFL. I mean, every team wants Kyle Pitts. Every team can use a Kyle Pitts. I don't care who you have and what your needs are. But yeah, I mean, I agreed with Dan in the sense that Arizona not only needs tight end, I think they need a secondary weapon is the synonym I've been using for pass catcher for Kyler Murray. And Kyle Pitts would take their offense to the next level and force Cliff Kingsbury to use two tight end sets, maybe, which would be exciting.
I immediately dove into the old stats, because I was like, I want to look something as soon as they said that, I want to look something up, because I remember Cliff inherited a pretty good pass catching tight end, not a great blocking tight end, pretty good pass catching tight end named Jason Morrow when he became the head coach of Texas Tech. In Cliff's first year at Texas Tech, and Cliff was not a tight end guy, he was more of a pure air raid guy. Jason Morrow caught 106 passes for like 1,400 yards. So it forced into it, I think it'd be good. But yeah. I want to get back to your pick of Justin Fields with the 49ers, because I think that pick, that trade that got the 49ers to 3 is the probably propelling most of the intrigue going into the draft. Like, you know, you have your Daniel Jeremiahs who say, oh, they're taking Mac Jones. This is to take Mac Jones. I have no idea who they're taking. What about Justin Fields, you know, between him, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, makes you decide that that's the guy I would take?
So I should first be clear. These were our drafts, not what we think will happen. I do not, I'll say right now, I do not think San Francisco is taking Justin Fields. If they do, it would be a Mount Etna level smoke screen. Vesuvius maybe is a better smoke screen. I don't know. Anyways,
it's a good smoke screen, yeah.
Too soon? I think enough time has passed. It would be a smoke screen of epic proportions, because Mac Jones, not just Daniel, DJ, our reporters have been pointing a glaring neon sign in the direction of Mac Jones, or have thrown out Trey Lance as a possibility too. Of course, we just saw San Francisco went to his pro day and had him like run the San Francisco offense, which is an amazing development in pro days. But anyways, I like Justin Fields for the Niners because I think that a Kyle Shanahan offense, every quarterback fits in it. Every quarterback will look better. To me, the question is there a quarterback that not only can fit in it, but also can elevate it? You know, has that sort of, God, it's becoming a cliche, but second reaction ability that is so necessary in the NFL now when you run into really good defenses that can disguise their intentions and get pressure with four. And I think Justin Fields has those abilities. He has the traits. He has the accuracy that's necessary to run that offense. What he doesn't have is a quickness to him, you know, and this is the constant debate about Justin Fields. Does the fact that he holds on to the football long, is that a product of the Ohio State offense? You would know better than I, or is it something that can be worked out? But I think like looking at the quarterbacks taken over the last few years and the ones that have developed into superstars, I'm going to bet on the traits guy. And I don't see why Kyle Shanahan wouldn't either, but he appears to be determined not to.
I understand the Mac Jones thing with Kyle Shanahan to get the ball out, because he's been in an offense with Steve Sarkisian that is, this is the read. If this guy is open, you throw it to him now. Then you move on. If that guy is open, you throw it to... There's a great YouTube clip from after the 19 season. So Jones had played the last four games after Tua got hurt. And Sarkisian's explaining their railroad concept, which is, you know, you got the back coming out of the backfield and the back's the first read. And he's like, he's at a coaching clinic. He's like screaming as the back is open, throw it to the back. He is open. Just throw it to him. And I get the feeling Shanahan's kind of like that too. Like, I have drawn it up this way.
I built this perfect machine. Just pull the levers.
The ball. Yes. Right. Yes. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah was on Robert Mays's podcast, The Athletic Football Show, for those who are listening.
No, I'm just kidding.
And Daniel, I believe, called what what Kyle Shanahan wants a human joystick. And yeah. I was thinking about that as I was playing Madden against my son and getting destroyed. When I hit the triangle button, I want him to throw to the triangle receiver. And I just imagine Kyle Shanahan being like that, like screaming silently during games when a quarterback misses a read because he was hitting the circle button.
Yeah. And there's this, I mean, all offensive-minded coaches have a certain confidence, whether it's that they think they can develop the quarterback, turn the rock clay into something, or whether they think their offense is brilliant. Kyle Shanahan, I think, is the best offensive mind in the NFL. But we have seen repeatedly there's a time where these brilliant offensive coordinators run into a brick wall, whether that's their own quarterback's limitations, which is, I think, what we saw in Los Angeles, eventually compelling Sean McVay to move on, or an incredible defense. And, you know, I just think my question with Mac, who I think can be a decent NFL, a good NFL quarterback, by the way, yeah. I'm not as low on him as I think some people, is have we hit the ceiling? Because, again, to go back, like, my biggest mistakes over the last few years have been underestimating Josh Allen and Justin Herbert.
Right.
I take more blame for the Justin Herbert one, because although the other day I went back, I said this on my pod, I went back and watched Oregon. I was like, no, actually he was not. I was right.
No, he wasn't. But, and I was the same way last year about Justin Herbert. Cause I kept saying, is he going to be that kind of guy when he gets, cause I remember interviewing Justin Herbert his junior year. And he just seemed so surprised that all of this was happening to him. And he just did, like, cause most quarterbacks have that inner confidence that is so high that, of course, I'm the starting quarterback at Oregon. Of course, the NFL teams want me. But Justin Herbert, very smart guy, also very honest guy, was like, yeah, this is crazy. Like, they want me? What? And it wasn't false humility. It was just like kind of trying to process all of this. And so I wondered, when he got to the NFL, could he command think about the alphas you're dealing with on the Chargers. I mean, within the Chargers offense. And so will he command their respect immediately? But he did. He did as soon as he got there. And, you know, it was interesting because it felt like he looked like a different quarterback at the end of the time at Oregon, almost because they changed the offense around and let him run a little more, let him run some people over a little more. I think they were trying to protect him a little bit early, but then realized, okay, we want to win a Pac-12 title. Let's let our 6'6", 240-pound dude steamroll some people. And he came out more confident and he's good. But the Allen thing, I was the same way. Because no one has gotten more accurate going to the more difficult level.
Yeah.
Until him.
And I think there's some danger in placing too much emphasis on what we saw from Allen, because it is so historically unprecedented and required, I think, the convergence of Allen's own work ethic, great coaching, incredible weapons, and GMing. All of that happened at once at the same time with him. But still, I said this on our show a bunch, who's the great pocket passer drafted in the last 10 years? I mean, it's like Cousins is okay. Derek Carr is decent. It's really hard to find one. And so again, if I'm an NFL team, I'm looking at the last 10 years of drafts and I'm thinking, oh man, I'd rather bet on my ability to draft the tools guy. And there are four guys with really cool tools in this draft. Yeah. Mac Jones, again, good quarterback, but he's not a tools guy.
Right. And Wilson has the crazy arm angles, crazy arm strength, mm-hmm. which is what we saw out of Mahomes coming out. And with Mahomes, it was, well, nobody's ever succeeded coming from the air raid to the NFL. Well, it took Andy Reid saying, you know what? We're going to kind of meet you where you are, but we're also going to have this year with Alex Smith where we're not going to throw you to the wolves. And I think that helped too. But yeah, I appreciate that the NFL coaches have finally started to kind of meet the college QBs where they are instead of complaining about what they don't know how to do. And I think that probably is the reason why we don't have that many great dropback passers being selected, because that's not who succeeds in college anymore usually.
Yeah. And I think also in the NFL, there is a lot of pressure to develop quickly. And those passers, if you don't have your legs to lean on as your get out of jail free card, it can be really hard to make that adjustment to the NFL. And there are probably, I don't know, maybe like a Josh Rosen, for example, maybe 8 years ago, Josh Rosen gets more time to develop in the NFL. Yeah. But in this league, you know, where the rookie contract's ticking, it's just not happening.
We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I've heard you guys talk about this, and I know the Atlanta thing is still kind of up in the air. What will they do? Will they take Kyle Pitts? Penei Sewell's probably there. Do they take a quarterback and kind of have him be an heir apparent to Matt Ryan? The thing I would love to see happen that I think would be the greatest thing is Justin Fields get picked by Atlanta. Have a year, sit behind Matt Ryan, become the starter. And then, I mean, if Justin Fields from, I believe he's from Kenesaw, he's from just, mm-hmm. you know, one of those northern suburbs, leads Atlanta to a Super Bowl, it'd be like if Outkast reunited. Like, it would be huge in that city. And he would be an icon. And so I just think that would be such a perfect combination. Now, is that what Jonathan Smith wants to do? I don't know. I mean, he's coming from a pretty athletic quarterback. Ryan Tannehill was a college wide receiver before he was a college quarterback. So I just feel like that would be such a perfect situation, but I don't know if the Falcons would do it given the salary cap commitment to Ryan.
Yeah. I would love the marriage of Justin and Arthur Smith. I mean, just that offense would be great for him. And
I say Jonathan Smith, he's the coach at Oregon State. My bad.
It's a really anonymous name. So Arthur Smith, and he's a very, most people can't even identify him despite the fact that he's the son of the FedEx billionaire, which is one of the more weird, fascinating NFL things.
Well, the son we remember of Fred Smith is Cannon Smith, who played quarterback, I believe, at Miami and at Memphis, I think.
I think there's like a zillion kids.
There's a lot of kids.
But yeah. In any case, I love it from a football perspective. My only hesitation for Atlanta would be, I was actually kind of confused that they did this. They restructured Matt Ryan's contract. So they pushed a ton of dead money out, which we and the NFL love, and to clear up some cap space. So next year, pre-June, it would cost them like $40 million to move on from Matt. Post-June, it would be, I believe, 25, and then they would hit the remaining 15.
Carson Wentz, moving on from Carson Wentz type money.
You know, it's all the vogue, but I will say, I think this, and you would know more about this than me by a lot, but this draft seems so much better than the next one.
Yes.
That it might still be worth it for Atlanta to take that swing now because they're probably not going to pick at four again. And this might be their shot at their quarterback of the future. So it's the most fascinating team in the draft because I've said this before, everything they could do is kind of defensible, including trading down, taking Pitts, or taking Justin Fields. But you're right. It would be a fabulous story.
Well, and the thing is like if, because Mac Jones feels like the 49ers, you know, there's a fit there. But if they wind up going with Lance, then I don't think it's an Aaron Rodgers type fall through the draft where there's nobody needed a quarterback. But it's who comes up. You know, is Bill Belichick pushing the button right at that point because he can get a QB? I don't know that Mac's tall enough for John Elway. So I just, you know, it's like riding a roller coaster to being the Broncos quarterback. You have 6'2", to be this tall.
He is, right? That's definitely.
Yeah, no, you got to be 6'4". So.
Yeah. Sorry, Mac.
What do you think Elway said when he saw Brock Osweiler for the first time?
Perfect. Perfection, like that Steve Jobs meme or whatever. Man, I've been hammering the table for the Broncos to take a quarterback because I think that team is a quarterback away, and I was really disappointed by what Drew Lock did there this year. So
not that I was
super high on him, but yeah, I feel like, you know, Drew Lock's also a guy who, you know, he played for all those years in college and he got better every year, but it's not like he's that unknown quantity, only played for a year. Maybe there's still time. Like, I think we kind of know who he is at this point. Yeah. And for Denver, I don't think it's enough.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, sample size is an interesting thing with this whole quarterback class. I mean, Trevor, we have a huge sample size. Zach Wilson's a little bit tougher just because BYU's schedule got blown up. Like, if BYU had played its original schedule and he'd put up those numbers, I'd feel differently.
Who are they supposed to play? I know.
So let me call it. The original schedule had, I believe, 6 Power 5 opponents. They would have played Arizona State. They would have played, I believe they would have played Utah. I think they had a Notre Dame game. Maybe they were talking to Notre Dame. Yeah, I think maybe they're talking to Notre Dame about a game before Notre Dame got to play the ACC schedule.
Although I cannot see how. Well, I mean, perhaps Zach Wilson would have been awesome and been number one contention, but it seems like he has benefited from the lack of competition. I would have personally liked to see that because it sure would have helped the evaluation process. Because when I watch BYU, I'm like, holy smokes.
Well, exactly. They've got a bunch of 24-year-old dudes blocking players, you know, from much lower levels. Okay, the original schedule included Utah, Michigan State, Arizona State, Minnesota, Utah State, Missouri, Houston, Northern Illinois, Boise State, San Diego State, and Stanford. So, I mean, it's would have been a very different evaluation.
That Utah 2019 tape, you know, looms large in the mind. I know he was banged up all year, but
to a lot of QBs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those Utah DBs, man. What do you think of Zach Wilson? I find him very hard to evaluate.
I do too. I love his arm talent. I love the way he can throw. Like, he can make a throw out of nothing. But like, there was one play that people were showing the other day where he kind of curls around the right tackle who is getting beat and makes this unbelievable throw. I'm trying to remember who it was against, but it was not against a great team. And it was one of those, if you're playing, let's say Stanford, or you're playing Michigan State in that situation, you're probably just on the ground instead of making that throw. So that's the part, but because he wasn't playing, it doesn't mean he can't.
Yeah.
It just means we don't know. And I feel the same about Trey Lance. You know, Trey Lance played for an option team in high school. So his first real experience playing quarterback in a passing offense is as a redshirt freshman at North Dakota State, and he was amazing. But that's all we got because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think my friend Danny Kelly tweeted that Trey Lance threw like 100 passes in high school or something, and then the single season. It's remarkable. People used to be so terrified of that, right? But then we had Kyler Murray with the season, and I.
But
people aren't as scared
Kyler
anymore.
Kyler Murray played for Allen High School in Texas. Right. He played big division football in the city. Kyler Murray, I mean, he couldn't have gone to the NFL from high school, but he had played against a bunch of future NFL players in high school. So it wasn't like,
and then in college, he
wasn't in shock. Yeah. So that's the part with Trey Lance. Like, if I were drafting Trey Lance, I would draft him with the intention of redshirting him.
I think whatever team takes him probably will, unless it's, if it's Denver or New England, I think he might, that might be the stated intention at the beginning. And I'd give Drew Lock about four games. I'd have to see their schedule before that gets blown to pieces, as it does literally every year.
I worry with a lot of these guys coming from college who don't have the bigger sample size or who didn't play against competition where they're seeing a bunch of future NFL guys, that the shock of it will be too much. It'll shatter their confidence and you don't get it back because you don't get, like you were talking about earlier, you just don't get that much time. And I think there've been some quarterbacks thrown away who might've ultimately become good, but they were just thrown to the wolves too. And we see that in college a lot too. You know, there's a guy in this draft, Felipe Franks, who kind of was lucky that he got a fresh start and a second chance. Cause he was one of those, he started as a redshirt freshman at Florida. He should not have started a game until he was a redshirt junior. And it took a while to get his confidence back to where it should have been. So, I worry about that. But the other thing that, and I'm curious about, because you follow this every day and you talk about this every day, the narratives that spring up around these quarterbacks, like the Justin Fields thing, and I realize Mort works for you guys, but the baseball thing he said the other day, I just started laughing because I was like, okay, there's a team that wants Justin Fields to fall to them, clearly, because where is all this stuff coming from?
I'll tell you just from my end, you know, talking about these guys, like so much attention and so much of our airspace is focused on five guys right now.
Yeah.
and it is silly. Like we are just everyone's picking them apart. And my hope is, you know, when we pick them apart, we're saying, hey, let's look at this, you know, let's look at Zach Wilson's tape against Coastal and let's pick that apart. Right. Cause it's interesting. There is a lot to learn there, but it is, it's a lot of time spent with a small group of players. That's for sure.
So one more quarterback question. And then, cause I know you don't want to talk about quarterbacks all day. I want to talk about,
what have we been doing in the last 30 minutes, picking these quarterbacks apart? Why aren't you asking me about,
everybody loves quarterback. Oh, we can get into Penei Sewell versus,
Elijah Vera Tucker. I don't know.
I do have a question. Actually, before I get to this other quarterback question, I want to ask you about the Elijah Vera Tucker thing. Reminded me of this. So Elijah Vera Tucker is a guy.
I don't have many smart takes on Elijah. Good.
He played guard and probably will play guard in the NFL, but played offensive tackle for
number one guard
USC last year. I laugh reading this, and I love all the folks who really talk line play. Lance Zierlein is one of my favorites, and Dane Brugler for us loves line play. But if you read the draft, the draft evaluator types, there are only three people in a given draft who can actually play offensive tackle. Like evals.
Yeah. Move him to guard.
This guy probably is better at guard.
Even Splater, right? That's what they're saying.
Yes.
You have to
have 64 tackles at any given moment.
I defer on offensive line stuff. I would say Sewell is a weird exception where when I'm watching, I'm like, holy shit. I can see that this fella is moving at a speed that someone that size should not be moving with a level. Like he looks like a cat and he's 330 pounds. I get that.
Yep.
But you know, I'm not going to front and pretend like I'm like, yeah, he's got the best feet in the class. His sets are really good.
Kick slide's unbelievable.
Oh man. I'm very blessed in that Mike Bullock Jr. at ESPN is one of my closest friends. And I literally probably text him 200 times a day being like, so, what do you think about, Darius Hoppers and Jenkins?
I'll hang up. Did Bullock play center guard and tackle at Notre Dame? I know he played multiple positions.
I know he played multiple positions. I'm a bad friend and don't remember which ones, but he is awesome at that stuff. And happy to impart his knowledge.
But I just find that hilarious because you have to have 64 people capable of playing tackle in the NFL. And then you don't have any backups, by the way. So realistically, there's probably 128 people that must be employed as an offensive tackle in the NFL. So they can't all just be guards.
yeah, I'm sure that Rashawn Slater will be a very nice tackle.
I think he'll be fine. Yeah. But the Sewell thing's fun to me too, because I went out to Eugene for a story his freshman year, and I didn't know much about him. It was early in the season, so I hadn't really gotten a chance to see them play yet. And they take me out to practice, and they just point at him. That's the freshman starting at left tackle. I'm like, oh my. And then you talk to Mario Cristobal, who's been around. I mean, he played on the baddest ass of badass Miami teams, where all the offensive linemen were pros, all the defensive linemen were pros. And he's like, this is the best guy I've ever coached. And he's a true freshman. You're like, okay, I'm going to believe that.
A teen he was. Yeah. Crazy.
Mind blowing. So Tom Brady made his first appearance for the Patriots in a preseason game 2 months before Penei Sewell was born.
That's good. That's a good
it's crazy.
Draft. But I need some draft fun facts like that. I might steal that one from you.
Oh, it's you That's are you are more than welcome to it. But
people love Tom Brady age facts. So yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, now we just have to do the math all the time. He started playing this many years before the iPhone, this many years before Twitter, this many years before Instagram. So, but it is, I'm 42. So seeing a human being older than me playing in the NFL absolutely blows my mind, because I know how my joints feel.
Yeah, I'm 35 and I started to feel it when they started calling me Miss and Mrs. like maybe 5 years ago. Yeah,
the pandemic has made me feel better about that, because when you're wearing the mask, they still card you when you buy beer.
Mm. I've never thought about it that way. I just like it because I don't have to wear makeup. So
there you go.
Different problems.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. My other quarterback question for you, I have a story that will come out the day that this podcast is coming, Wednesday morning. I worked with Grace Rayner, who's our Clemson writer on this. We talked to some of the Jaguars fans who bought gifts off of Trevor Lawrence's wedding registry and sent them. And they bought a very nice touchscreen toaster, a $205 chopping block. So I'm going to ask you, there's some gifts still here. What would you rather have of the ones they still need? Would you like the Le Creuset nonstick 10-piece set, or the aluminum pasta maker, or, and I can't believe nobody bought this, the KitchenAid Artisan Series 5 quart tilt head stand mixer?
Oh, stand mixer.
Definitely. Exactly. Yeah. Who doesn't buy the stand mixer?
Yeah, that's luxury. You just that exact product. I need one. So
it's we have the one that I think my wife's mom got for her wedding. It's still going.
I think you can only acquire a stand mixer by getting married. Like, you can't actually buy one just on your own. You have to get married. Some people probably get married just to get them.
Do you still have your wedding license? Do you just bring it in? Yeah, I promise I'm married. I can have this.
Well, I mean, God, you might as well just go through with a wedding just to get the mixer, you know?
They wanted a $2,900 leather sofa from Craig.
Really?
Carroll. Nobody bought it for him.
Didn't know people registered for furniture.
I thought that was a little odd too. But the touchscreen toaster, apparently very popular. The fans were going to, they were going to chip in and buy one, and then the guy who started it got so much money so fast for the toaster, he realized we could probably do better than this. And they decided to just make it a fundraiser. And they,
oh, so this, the Lawrence, this isn't his registry. Someone made
this is his registry. No, this is really his registry.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised the $2,900 leather sofa didn't, you know, inspire a round of sports radio takes, you know, oh, this entitled millennial thinks that he's, you know, deserves a sofa or is just getting married.
Him saying that football isn't the end all be all was what set off sports talk radio.
He likes being in a sofa. Now we know why.
Well, he got two sets of knives. He has 29 pieces of knives. He has a Henkel set and a Cuisinart set.
Sounds like they like cooking.
I know. I don't know if it's him or Marissa that likes to cook, or maybe it's both. Maybe they cook together.
It looks like, I mean, that's a big kid there. So man, big man.
Well, and one, a lady who is a massive Jaguars fan. And she told us this because her kids' names are Jackson, spelled like the Jacksonville mascot, and London, named because of a game in London where the child was conceived. She told us that on the record.
That is peak Duval. Nothing but respect.
I say this as someone who lives two counties over from Duval. It feels right. It just feels, but she bought the chopping block, and she says her husband is not a football fan at all. And he's like, why did you pay $200 for a chopping block for total strangers? And she's like, it's Trevor Lawrence, honey.
She's like, do you not know the names of our children? You think this is taking it too far?
Exactly.
Amazing.
Exactly. So yeah, these are the quarterback takes that I'm here for, not breaking down how Trevor Lawrence feels about life and the sport of football, based on some, the quotes to me as someone who has followed Trevor Lawrence for a while, I was like, that sounds like him. Like, it doesn't change the way I feel about him at all.
Mm. Yeah. It seems generational. You know, there was a story, ESPN had a story about Trey Lance, that came out as well by Tim Kuhn, and he had some kind of similar quotes in it. They didn't get as much attention, but you know, he talked about when he was young, he was kind of overlooked a lot. Trey Lance actually Trey Lance, unlike Trevor Lawrence, actually can make a case for having a chip on his shoulder, right?
Exactly.
But he said he was like, nah, I don't really think about it that way. I don't really care. Like, you know, if people are against me, I don't mind that. I wasn't that loud as a kid. And I was like, man, this is very refreshing. And I feel like something might be afoot generationally with how kids talk about themselves and perceive themselves.
Yeah. And Trevor's thing, the no chip on the shoulder, I mean, he's been the best at it.
Right.
His entire life. Like, Deion never had a chip on his shoulder either, because Deion was the best. Like, Deion was the best in elementary school. He was the best in middle school, the best in high school, and the best in college. Like, and then the best in the NFL. That doesn't mean he didn't work hard, because you can have all the God-given talent in the world and not, if you don't try in the NFL, you're not going to make it. But he was the best. And you know, Trevor's been the same way, and we'll see if that actually works out for him. I mean, that's the amazing thing to me is you can study this and break it down every way you want. It is still basically a like 30-70 proposition whether a quarterback's going to pan out in the first round.
Whether many players will, right? I mean, yeah, you know, we do our best, teams do their best, the players do their best, but the NFL is a really, really difficult league, and situation determines far more than any of us, I think, represent.
Before I let you go, I got to ask, so you've been doing a lot of studying on different players in the draft. Who are a couple of your just absolute favorites that when you put the video on, you're like,
oh boy,
this is so much fun.
Oh boy, who's fun? Okay, I got to stand for a Husky. And there's a few Huskies that opted out. And
well, I appreciate your Vita Vea fanship, because he's one of my absolute favorites.
One of the best players in the NFL, frankly. It's not going to be any of the defensive linemen for me. I'm going to go with Elijah Molden. I just think he's so underrated. I know, you know, there's questions like how high can a slot corner go? And also I had Mike Renner on my pod and mentioned him, and he said he thinks he should play safety. And I can see some argument for that depending on where he ends up. But I just think the way things are going in the league, you know, where with passing and the kind of defenses and schemes we're seeing emerge, I just think he's such a useful piece for a really good defense. And he's so smart, so instinctive, so athletic. He's just, he was one of my favorite players to watch at Washington, you know, during his career there. So
and
I love
him. Strikes me as someone who fits very well into what the league is becoming. You know, I always talk about Alabama, and I remember watching, you know, Nick Saban's defenses struggle against the up-tempo spread offenses that were coming out with four wides and five wides a lot. And so what did he do to fix that? His entire secondary, and they'd play in nickel all the time, would be guys who were recruited as corners. Yeah. He'd just then find the guys who had safety type traits like Minkah Fitzpatrick, who could do a little bit of everything. But he just wasn't worried about, like, can you cover was the baseline. And then, oh, you can cover and you can come up and support the run. Okay, well, then we'll play you at safety. But can you cover had to be the first thing. And that's why I like, that's why I like Mullen.
He's just so good at reading quarterbacks too. And yeah. Anyway, so I think he's, I look at him and I think you're going to be good in the NFL. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I just think I would draft him probably higher than I've seen him being mocked. I guess a wide receiver that I like. This has the influence of your fellow contributor, Nate Tice. I'm really into Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. I think he does him as wide receiver too. He's four for me, but ESPN, they put together these reels for the players and, you know, just, which is merciful, you know, so I don't have to watch every Minnesota game. And I just think he's just so complete as a player already. His cuts, his route running ability, he's obviously got this height and speed, catch radius, yards after contact, like just, I think he's the total package, frankly. And in a draft where a lot of the receivers are not that, where you've got a bunch of really small, fast guys and then a couple of bigger guys, I think he stands out. Like, to me, I would absolutely take him in the first round. I've seen him land all the way. I mean, if I'm the Ravens, it's a no-brainer, 27. I think he should go earlier. I'm looking at teams like Tennessee.
That's not, the Ravens aren't allowed to do that. I always hate
they
when
need
the Ravens,
a wide receiver,
like when they
man.
Got when they got Patrick Queen last year, I was like, that's not fair. Like, somebody should have picked him first, and don't let them outdraft you every time.
I we'll see what happens. They really need a wide receiver. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But I really like this player.
Interesting that you bring up Nate. Nate and Robert Mays had a conversation on Robert's show a couple weeks ago that I was actually yelling at my radio as I was driving. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And it was, the conversation was the way the wide receiver position has evolved over the last 20 years, not just in the NFL, but from elementary school up, you know, guys are catching more balls. And really it started in high schools 20 years ago when high schools became more spread forward. And so guys are in 7-on-7 catching balls. In college, they go to offenses where they catch 70 balls a year. And so instead of having these guys coming out where if they had a good season, maybe they caught 40 or 50, you know, you have guys who maybe for 3 years averaged 70 catches. There's so many good wide receivers right now. And that's why, if you can take Kyle Pitts, if you can take Penei Sewell, you take them and go find a receiver later. Because
that's how I feel.
They're going to be good wide receivers next year.
I actually think if Penei is there for Miami, they should take him and wait for a receiver later on.
Agreed.
And I got into argument with Todd and Dan today on NFL Live about that. I mean, they're picking at 18 too. They can get Bateman.
Exactly. I love Jamar Chase.
You can't
Chase.
Get another
Penei
Sewell, man.
Yep, yeah. Love Jalen Waddle, but if Penei Sewell is there, I am taking him. If Kyle Pitts is there, I am taking him. Like, because I can't find those guys in five. Maybe one of them comes along in the next 5 years, but maybe not.
Yeah.
The production of good receivers, the receiver factory is working overtime right now. So there will be more. So that's, I'm glad we're on the same page on that one. But Bateman, I'm with you. Like, that was me. That was T. Higgins with me last year. Like, T. Higgins is going to make somebody so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a fun player. I really enjoy watching him too.
So Mina, thank you so much. This has been so much fun, and we will be listening to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. We'll be watching you on NFL Live, and it has been an honor. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.